We've been looking at how, the first week, we looked at how the church is a family, how we have to remember that the church is not just this organism, this entity, this thing that resides on a legal document that we file for paperwork purposes, but that the church is a family. It's like a family. And just like a family, we want our church, we want our family here to be as healthy as possible, how we want to take care of one another, look after the needs of one another, the same way we would for the family that we love. And then we looked at how Jesus talked about how he was here, not only he was here for everyone, but that he was here specifically for the sick. And we looked at how the church needs to function like a hospital. The church needs to function like a place where we're organized in such a way that we look after the needs of those who are sick. We have to consider those who are sick. We have to consider those who are not well. And what I want to look at today, in just summing all of it up, is understanding that the church is the people. Really focusing on how the church is the people and how we apply that to our lives, how we look at that. And so the title of the sermon today, very simply, is Whoville. Because what I want us to really think about as we go through this over the next few minutes is not necessarily the what's of the church, all the different things that we do, the different functions of the church, but the who, the people who are in the church and what makes up the church, and how this all applies to discipleship. So I'm going to start, if you would, turn with me to Luke chapter 10. In Luke chapter 10, starting in verse 38, we're going to see an example of how often when we have the mentality of being focused on the what's and the whys and all the different things, the objects, the activities, and the duties of the church, that sometimes, if we're not careful, we forget to focus on who. And in verse 38, where I'll start, it says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her. So we see in this passage here that many of us are familiar with an example of priorities, an example of decisions that need to be made. Jesus is coming to your house. I would hope that you would pick up, vacuum, clean up, make sure that you had your dishes clean, and make sure you had enough refreshments for all the other people who were coming. But what Jesus is pointing out here about what's important and the decisions that we make, he's pointing out that one sister made a better choice than the other. And it says in verse 41, Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better. Sometimes we can focus so much on making sure that all the preparations are right, making sure that everything is in order, that we forget that our relationship, the church, is built on relationships. And it starts by seeing in verse 38 there where Jesus spent time with his disciples. They were going along their way. It wasn't just this thing where Jesus was kind of always off to himself. He spent time with people. He was able to have the impact on his disciples and those who were following him because he had a relationship with him. It would be an example I use often is how If you want your marriage to be better, if you want your relationship with your children to be better, you could go out and you could buy your wife a bunch of gifts. Your wife could go out and buy you some gifts when she gets paid next week. She could. You could go out and buy your kids all the best books. I remember when I was younger, my dad bought encyclopedias, thinking, well, this will help because this is before the internet. So what you had was encyclopedias so that we could go back and do the research and we would do better at our homework. And as parents, yes, we could do those things and those things would help, but the best thing you can do is actually spend time with your kids and help them with their homework. The best thing you could do is just take some time, forget buying a gift, pay a babysitter. Take half your day off. Spend some time with your wife. What we see here is Jesus spent time, he invested time into his disciples. Going along, we see that Mary wanted to spend time with Jesus. She wanted to have that relationship. She wanted to sit at his feet and learn. And as we go on, we see that Martha, clearly her heart, she wanted to do the right thing. She wanted to get things ready. She wanted to make sure things were prepared. But when Jesus says, Mary has chosen what is better and it will not be taken away from her, a very important element of this is the fact that Jesus understood that you can always have things. There's always going to be work to do. There's always going to be things that need to be done. We show up here on a Sunday. There's always going to be things that need to be done. There's always going to be somebody who is sick that maybe couldn't make it. There's always going to be somebody has to prepare the elements here that we have when we have communion. Someone's got to make sure that the bulletin that we get is printed off. There's all these preparations, but what's most important is getting to know one another so that we can help one another, so that we can have an impact on one another's life. That in and of itself is discipleship, the relationship. There's only one thing that's necessary, is what he said. And the question I want to ask is, what made Mary's choice so much better? What was it about her choice that was so much better than Martha's? Because we know those things are important. Now, what's interesting is, if we flip over to 1 John chapter 4, it'll give us a clue. It says, and I actually want to start in 19, 1 John chapter 4. Says in verse 19, we love because he first loved us. If anyone says, I love God, yet hates his brother, he is a liar. For anyone who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And he has given us this command, whoever loves God must also love his brother. Relationships matter in the church. Relationships matter if we're going to be the vessel that God uses as his church body. And one of the things is sometimes we can fall in love with the things of the church. You know, you'll find that a lot of people, they, you know, like my wife and I, we've moved quite a bit over the past 10 years or so, and we've seen different churches. And a lot of times people get caught up on, well, where is the church? Is it a really big church? You know, are there a lot of young people? Are there a lot of old people? Do they have a choir? Do they have, you know, how big is the auditorium? And do they have this type of ministry and that type of ministry? And there's all these things of the church that we get caught up on. And what we fail to realize is that it's the relationships that you have with your brothers and sisters that are going to keep you faithful. The choir isn't going to keep you faithful. The preacher being 6'5" and having this booming voice or having a certain presence or, you've got this ministry staff here and you've got this person there. All of those things don't save people. We see that with Jesus all the time. We have to be caught up in the relationships. It was interesting, Ben and I, we were talking yesterday about the Halloween, the trunk or treat that we had yesterday. It was amazing. If you missed it, I feel sorry for you. It was great. There was quite a few little kids that were just, their costumes were amazing. The cutest things. But what was interesting was I was telling him how when I was little, we didn't celebrate Halloween. We didn't celebrate a lot of holidays, but we definitely didn't celebrate Halloween. But we would go to church, and they had this thing, they called it All Saints Day, and we would dress up. And my mom, like, there was one girl who came, and she won one of the prizes, and she looked amazing, but what happened was she actually, you could tell that the parents didn't just go out and buy, they didn't do like Sharice and I, they didn't just go out and get an Iron Man, you know, costume with Party City. She went into great detail. It was a bride of Chucky. I believe it was Leroy's granddaughter, and it was fantastic. I mean, she went into detail. Like, she did the little makeup, you know. They went and got this jacket. It was a Harley Davidson jacket. It was quite impressive. But my mother literally used to get a pillowcase and this bed sheet, and she would dress me up like this toga, little wrap thing that they used to wear back in the Bible days. And I was John the Baptist until I was like 10. Like, she would just dress me up in this outfit, and I was like, literally, every year, I was John the Baptist. She said, you're my little John the Baptist, so I'm going to dress you up like you. Now, she also said I was wild and that I did wild, crazy things, and that was her reference to John the Baptist. I bring up my mom because not only was she very rigid about those types of things and very careful what we were influenced by, one of the things, I don't know if you all recognize this logo, Trinity Broadcasting Network, out of Richmond, Indiana, not far from where I'm from. And so even before they became worldwide and had a large network, my mother, literally, I grew up watching this. Like, we had to sneak and watch, like, cartoons and stuff because my mother wanted to make sure that we weren't being influenced negatively. Now, I have a lot of people I know who they're really into the televangelist thing. They're not particularly into what we would call the church community. In fact, they even have the attitude of, well, you know what? I'd rather just stay home and watch somebody on TV and hear the word. They're better than the local preacher anyway. But they stay away from the local church. They stay away from those people. And what happened was, if you go back about, you know, I believe it was in the 1920s when they started doing, and this was mostly on radio at the time, obviously, because we didn't have television in all the households, but they had radio televangelists start sprouting up, and people would start tuning in. Slowly but surely, and people, you know, they liked it, but slowly but surely, people started getting away from actually going to church and being a part of church and being involved in people's lives, and they relied solely on, well, I just need the knowledge. I just want to learn. I don't really want to be bothered with the ins and outs and the problems with people. And so as time went on, you started slowly but surely. This is Paul and Janice Cross. They were actually the ones who started the Trinity Broadcasting Network. Now, he died a few years ago, and she actually just, I believe it was this past May passed. And one of the things I remember, they interviewed them, and they said their intention when they started TBN was never to take away from people being involved in their local churches. It was actually there to supplement and help people so that they had an alternative to the media. You didn't just have to watch secular television. But as televangelists started coming up out of everywhere, I mean, you'll recognize some of these faces. I'm sure you know some of these people. And they're very popular. They've come along. And I remember when I was in college, Creflo was very, very popular. He came on BET. He was, like, syndicated and, like, every morning. And there were people who literally took the attitude that this will take place of church for me because I don't want to deal with the attitudes. I don't want to have to deal with being, volunteering my time or serving people. I just want the knowledge. You know, we know in 1 Corinthians 8 where it says, knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. You know, if we look at the Corinthian church, what they were being told in that particular passage was that having knowledge, being fed knowledge, being given the word is one thing, but it's useless if you don't return it, if you don't do something with it that's going to have an impact on people's lives. And so going back, we're looking here at 1 John where it talks about how can you love God who you haven't seen, but you can't love your brother who you have. That's a call to us as the church to understand that we can't say that we love this God, but we don't love the people who are around us. We don't love the lost enough to spend time with them and reach out to them and hopefully help them find a relationship with God. We don't love our brothers and sisters enough to be involved in their personal lives. Last week, during a Bible study on Wednesday, we were talking about all these different scriptures about relationships, and there's the one where it talks about confessing your sins to one another. Well, there's trust involved in good relationships. There's the investment that we put into people that allows us to be able to say, you know what? Yes, I'm going to sit down, and not just because Curtis is an elder, but because I know him, because we've spent time together, I know that I can trust him. I know that he's going to keep confidence and that I can share with him, because it says that you confess your sins so that someone can pray for you, so that you can get better. See, if I don't know him, then why would I just open up and talk to him? Why would I share something very intimate and personal that may be a challenge for me if I don't know him, if I don't have a relationship with him, if I don't have a relationship with Leroy, then how can I know to talk to him? How can I know if I don't have a relationship with him, well, this is where he worked, and this is, you know, this he retired from here, and he does this now. And it was so interesting because a couple weeks ago I was talking to him, and I was talking to him about selling cars. He's like, I don't do that anymore. Like, I'm just tired of it, you know. We have to be involved in one another's lives in a very intimate and personal way, because that's what Jesus did. That is how it happens. It's not having this humongous building or having this, you know, gigantic staff of paid ministry and having thousands of people coming to church. It's who do you know? And I won't call out any names, but one of the things that came to my attention recently was how there was one particular person who mentioned how they had been visiting other churches. They're very large churches. And he said he'd been there, he'd been going there for weeks, even months maybe. And it was great because, you know, it's like thousands of people at every service. And, you know, it was uplifting and the singing was great. He said, but I didn't know anybody. Nobody talked to me. Nobody spent any time, not just a, hey, how you doing, pleasantry, shake your hands, great to meet you, okay, your name is Ben, I'm not going to remember that in 5 minutes, but actually, let's get together and have lunch this week. What is your schedule? What's your availability? What are you doing after church now? Would you like to have lunch? Me and my wife, we always go out to have lunch. Maybe there's a way in which we could help you. Maybe there's a way in which we could serve you and meet your needs. Let us know what we can do. He didn't get any of that. Now, interestingly enough, when my wife and I first moved here, before we knew the church was here, before we knew anything about it, we literally just went to a couple of the churches just so that we could go to church. We always want our children to be in the habit of attending church, but it was interesting because we said the same thing. The same thing that this gentleman said to me. He said, you know, because we gave him a second shot and a third shot after the first one didn't go so well. And it was like, well, they're definitely interested in collecting our money. They're definitely interested in singing. They're definitely interested in what we might call showmanship, but nobody was interested in us. As the church, as God's representative, as his ambassadors, we have to be interested in us. We have to be interested in the people, because all the praise and all the worship and all the I love the Lord means nothing if you're not willing to love the person sitting right next to you. The person sitting in the aisle, just one seat over. If you're not willing to love them, how can you say that you love God? Love shows itself in many ways. We can't be lovers of God and not our brothers. And so very important, and I want to highlight this, is that the evidence of our love is found in our relationships. Because all the things that we learn, the way that we put them into practice, is in our relationships. You see throughout the Gospels where that is what, when he sent the disciples out two by two, it wasn't just go preach the gospel and then go home. Get to know these people. We see it throughout the first century church as we look through the New Testament. It was love your brother, get to know your brother, challenge them, encourage them, build them up. All of those are relationship items. That's what discipleship is. It's relationships. We have to be committed to one another in our relationships. I mentioned this passage before. Knowledge is not a measure of our growth. A lot of times we have these different markers that we set down, and we will say from the outward appearance, this church must be growing because it's growing in numbers. We have a lot of people here on Sunday. Or this church must be growing because everybody's smiling and everybody's singing really loud. Or this church must be growing, and you fill in the blank, whatever marker it is. But the true growth and the true measurement of our growth spiritually as individuals is what we're willing to do. If we're willing to be like Jesus and lay down our life to sacrifice, if we're willing to be involved, even when it's complicated, even when it's hard, even when it's a challenge, I feel like I know Kevin well enough to put him on the spot. I went to go pick up Kevin. First of all, Kevin seemed to have a great time yesterday with the kids, but what's interesting is we went and I had this whole elaborate thing planned out this morning where we were going to pick up a bunch of different people on campus, a bunch of the college students, right? And as it turned out, I was planning to stop here and then stop there and then go here and stop here and stop there. Well, the thing that was interesting is a couple people just said, hey, you know what, we'll be there next week because something came up. Another person couldn't make it because they weren't feeling well. And so all those plans, it was like, well, I'm just waiting on Kevin. Did all that planning, did all that organization, and for a lot of people, and I'm saying this not to indict anyone or really make anybody feel any particular way, but I want us to understand, for a lot of people, the trouble to go and pick up one person, sometimes that's just not worth it. I'm not just making this up. I've actually had people, they've told me, they said they were hurt because, well, and this person happened to be over at Luther Tower, and she said she was hurt because they have this bus riding ministry where they go and they pick up some of the patients in the assisted living facility. But they wouldn't come out there if it were just one or two people. They wouldn't show up if it was just one or two people because it wasn't worth it. That's what it means to be focused on the things, the what's, and the why's, and not necessarily being focused on the who's. Because we don't know how important it was for that one person to be in the presence of the believers and be able to get encouragement or maybe get help or get some type of support. We don't know. See, Kevin's worth it. He's smiling. He knows he's worth it. I'll go pick him up. We see this all the time. There are decisions that we have to make in our lives every single day, and we have to decide, is it worth it to show love to somebody, even if it's just one person, even if I'm not going to get anything back, even if I don't even necessarily see what the benefit of it is? Is it worth it to show up? Is it worth it to be there and love that person? There are no absentee Christians, only active ones. It's not good enough to just say, well, you know what? I send him my money. I show up every once in a while. I'm generally speaking a nice person when I'm there, but I'm not really all that worried about being involved in a body. Because it's not about you being here. See, ironically, today is one of those days where there's not a lot of people here for various different reasons, but we know who they are. We've seen them. We've talked with them. They're not just out there. What we need as a church is to understand that we don't want absentee Christians. We don't want people mailing it in. We want you to be there because you're needed there. We talked about that last week, but it's important we understand. We need you a part of the fellowship. We need you to strengthen us. There are people out there who seeing you on a Sunday during our worship service isn't enough. It isn't enough. And so what more do you have to give? Or are you just mailing it in? And the question I want to ask us is, do we have growing relationships? And when I say growing, I mean, like, there are some of us who've been here literally decades. And so we know certain people, like, I mean, we probably know their social security number, blood type, everything. Like, we've just known them that long. But what about people that we haven't known that long? What about people that we haven't spent time with very much? Are those relationships growing as well? Are we invested in those relationships? Do we see that it's important that you be involved in that person's life? And it may not necessarily be for you. It may be for them. The reason why you need to invest that love in that relationship is so that you can give something, not necessarily to receive it. The church needs you to be active. And so quickly, I'm going to close by just highlighting that the church exists out of relationships. Discipleship is at the core of Jesus' message. It is impossible to look at Jesus and his ministry and what he calls us to be as Christians and have weak relationships, to not be invested and involved in relationships with others. Are we seeking out relationships, or are we just seeking out knowledge? Do we come here on Sunday or Wednesday or whatever time we do? Do we come just so that we can get something? Or are we coming because we know that those relationships matter? That is what the church is. An organization, an organism, a group of relationships. Are you setting the example for others? Are you modeling? See, that's what discipleship is. Discipleship, in its just basic definition, is modeling the behavior of a master, someone who has shown an expertise in something. It's like being an apprentice. Are we setting that example? Those of us who have the knowledge, have the understanding, have the faith, are we setting that example? Or are we mailing it in? Are we only doing the bare minimum? And are we making disciples like Jesus commanded? Are we in the business of helping people who want to know what it means to live like Christ? Are we in the business of helping them see what that is? Are we in the business of instructing? Are we in the business of doing that? Because if we're not building relationships, if we're not getting to know one another, if we're not willing to be turned away or rejected, how can you ever build relationships? Jesus was rejected by, if you really think about it, practically everybody. While he was walking earth, he was rejected by everybody. That's the reality of our lives. We're going to be rejected by people who may just say, I'm not really all that worried about it. I don't really think about God. I have my own way of doing things. And then you're going to have some people who are just flat out just going to say, you know what? I don't even want to be your friend no more. I just don't even want to talk to you because I'm against what you stand for. But we have to be okay with that. We have to be okay with that if we're going to build the relationships and we're going to be able to make disciples, because it's not about this popularity contest where we're trying to accumulate friends. We're not trying to get as many people in the door as we can. What we're trying to do is have an impact on people's lives by us modeling the example of Christ. That is discipleship. Are we making disciples? And with that, have you been made into a disciple? Are you yourself a follower of Christ? Have you made that commitment? Have you heard the word and said, you know what? I believe. Decided that I am going to get baptized. I'm going to follow Christ. I'm going to live like him. Have you made that decision? Have you come to that conviction that, you know what? I need not only the relationships of my brothers and sisters, but I myself need to be in relationship with God. Is that a decision that you've made? If you haven't, why don't you do it today? If you'd like to talk to somebody about it, if you'd like to come forward here in a minute and say, yes, I need to be made a follower of Christ. I need a relationship with God. This is your opportunity to do it. Before you walk out of here, this is your opportunity. This is your chance. And so as not to leave anybody hanging, the reason why I say I'm going to cut it short is because I want us, after we finish here, after the announcements, I want us to spend some time, a little extra time, in fellowship. I don't want you to run out of here and leave and just go home. I want you to take that extra 5 or 10 or 15 minutes, and I want you to say, you know what? I've never spoken to this person in depth, at length at all. I'm going to spend some time getting to know them. I'm going to set up a time where maybe she and I or he and I can just sit down and talk. Because without the relationships, we don't have a church. And we certainly don't have a church that's following God. But it begins with our commitment. And if you haven't made that commitment, if you haven't made the commitment to follow him, to grow in your relationship with him, I want you to come forward. If you like, you can step to the back. One of the elders will be there. But I want you to make that